Darren Kelly joins me with JobSpot. What have you got today, Des?
Gee whiz, Sean, three in total, all again from Logstrup in Tuam. Logstrup Tuam are hiring sub-assembly operators. Duties include assembly of components and kits. Full training provided. Apply via email to info@logstrup.ie. Logstrup Tuam are also hiring mechanical assembly operators. Duties include the mechanical assembly of electrical panels. Previous experience in mechanical assembly would be an advantage. Full training provided. Email CV to info@logstrup.ie. And finally, Logstrup Tuam are hiring machine shop operators. Duties include the operation of press brakes, punch presses and saws. Previous experience would be an advantage. Full training provided. Email CV to info@logstrup.ie. And if you need any phone numbers or email addresses, please call our reception on 091-770-077. Search hashtag Galway Jobs on social media or go to galwaybfm.ie/jobspot.
Thank you, Darren. Now, not everyone happy with the way I conducted my last interview. John, you're not letting the professor speak. He is quite interesting to listen to and I would like to hear more of what he has to say. I'm shocked at how John spoke to Patrick Holford. He invited this man on to speak and then constantly interrupted him and insulted him. It's disgraceful. I think it's terrible how John spoke to that professor. He kept interrupting him and would not let him answer the questions from Peter. Well, I think I'm very consistent on the show. If someone is not answering a question, I'll butt in and ask them again. And he can often get in trouble for letting someone waffle on. So you have to strike a balance there somewhere. Bit of balance here though, because someone says, "Hi John, fair play for the robust questioning of this guest. For non-experts like me, the voice and language and references to Oxford and Trinity sounds very convincing. Good that you are going fairly hard. The fact that there's no mention of Hull University gives the grift away." So that's a nice bit of balance on our text lines this morning. Now though, we're moving on to financial advice. We are joined in studio by Dave McCarthy of McCarthy and Associates of Wood Quay. Dave, good morning. The first topic we're looking at is online fraudsters are trying to hit their victim twice.
Yeah, can you believe it? You get scammed once and now they're coming back for a second bite. So what this is about is the Banking Federation have come out with a warning with evidence that they have the people who have been defrauded by scams online are now finding that they're being approached again. And it's very sophisticated, and that's why I suppose they're putting out this warning, because people need to be very aware. What's happening is that the past fraudster or a new fraudster who's bought their information, whichever, has all the information on the original fraud and they have personal details on that person who's been victimized. And they're now approaching the individuals concerned and say, "Look, we are an agency, we're a consultancy firm, call it what you want, and we will get your money back for you." And they're using sometimes well-known institutions as a reference point for their approach. So, you know, you can imagine you've lost €10,000 or whatever it is. You're desperate and people are kind of in a situation where they feel, "Oh my God, what the hell has happened to me here?" And then they get an approach with somebody who has information about you that seems to be, which is detailed. And you think, well, you know, maybe if I spend another €1,000, which is what they're looking for, you know, maybe 10% of what you lost, I'll get my money back. No. That's not the case. So all I would just say, unfortunately, if you've been stung once, please don't let yourself get stung a second time.
Right, we have a question here as well. What's the average term for an investment options that are available?
Anywhere from 3 to 5 years. Generally, most investments are around 5 years. There are some for 4 years and very few for 3 years. Investments are not meant for short-term periods, in other words, 1 or 2 years. Anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Another question in. I recently had a problem with getting credit and discovered that the lender I'd applied to turned me down because of a bad credit rating for somebody with a similar name. Is this a common occurrence?
No, but I've come across it. You know, sometimes you have. In Ireland, we have in a very unusual situation. We can have people, especially maybe outside the urban areas, same names and same address, you know. John Morley, one Main Street, Ballina, or whatever it is. I wouldn't think there's too many John Morley.
There's a good few of them.
But yeah, it can happen. And it's upsetting, actually, you know, if something like that does happen and you realise, you know, I have a problem here and it's not of my making. So what you need to do is you need to get onto the Central Credit Register, which is the agency that all this information, your credit rating, feeds from. There's a website there, centralcreditregister.ie. You need to talk to them. They may refer you to the lender, another lender that you might have dealings with, and get them to correct your details, but you need to get them, the Central Credit Register, to put some sort of a flag or change the system. But aside from that, John, people have a tendency not to bother to check their credit rating or what information is on this register until they go for finance, or maybe they're turned down. There have been continuous problems with some of the records that they hold. It's not their fault, it's the fault sometimes of the institutions. For example, during COVID, you know, there was a mortgage pause where people could avail of a pause on their repayments. And a number of institutions have put incorrect information up there. And that has come into the public domain. So all I would just say to you, if you've never checked your credit history, your credit record, even if it's not something that you need for loan purposes of that, it's important to know what information is there for me. Go on to the centralcreditregister.ie. It's a free service. You make the application online. And if there's a problem, go back to the institution that has put the incorrect posting up, not the register.
Okay. Now, another question. I lost my pension. I was with an employer years ago and have no idea where my pension went to.
Now, question. How could you lose your pension? I'm not expecting you to answer it, but
I'm a few years off that.
Yeah, well, it's actually nothing to do with your age. What has actually happened here, and believe it or not, the incidence is much higher than people think. We're living in an age where people move from one job to the next. There's mobility. Generally, they say you won't be in a job for more than 7 years now, right? And then you might have had pension arrangements in each one of those employments. People kind of leave and they really mightn't think too much about the pension they had with them, and they just move on. They may get in correspondence, they may not. Then they move address, right? So therefore, whoever the pension was with originally, any correspondence they may ever send out, which they should be doing on an annual basis, is going to an address where you don't live and you may not get your post. So years move on. So in other words, it can happen that there's, and I'm sure there's a level of pensions out there that are kind of frozen in time with some of these companies, because the individuals don't know and haven't corresponded or had contact with the companies involved for the reasons that I mentioned. So for this person, all I will say is try to get onto the original employer if they're still around. And if not, I think you're going to have a tricky task to track it down, but it could be well worth your while. Get onto the pensions board and ask them for advice. They are very helpful. And I'll give you a simple example of what I'm talking about. I came across somebody a number of years ago, very simply, they were at retirement age, and we said to them, did you have any old pensions paid up, whatever, with previous employers? And he was thinking, well, yeah, actually, I did have one going back about 20 years ago. He worked on the east side of the country. Anyway, to make a long story short, he didn't realise he had something. He went off and did a bit of fishing, came back with a little bit of information, and we eventually were able to establish he had €50,000 in an old pension plan that he'd kind of lost complete connection with. So all I will just say is make sure that you keep it details on any pension plan from an employment once you move on to the next employment.
Okay, another question. I have an existing personal pension plan and recently joined a new employer. My new employer has a company pension scheme in place. The employer will contribute a portion of my salary and I would also have to contribute to it. Is it advisable for me to consider this option, or should I make my own arrangements on my pension?
You always join the employer scheme. I mean, it's free money. For a simple example, a lot of schemes are maybe where the individual puts 5% and the employer puts 5%. And if you're on the top rate of tax of 40%, that actually means you're only costing you 3%. So in other words, you get tax relief on the 5. So for every €10 that goes into that pension scheme between your contribution and the employer, the net cost to you is 3. So it's an absolute no-brainer. Don't ever turn down an opportunity to join an occupation scheme.
There's another question in a similar vein. Dave, I'm a pensioner receiving inheritance from the US. Do I have to pay tax on this in the US?
Depends on where you register for tax. I'm assuming that you're an Irish tax resident. Tax in the US is a very complicated area. You will need to establish from the US if there is going to be any tax deducted from it, rather than you, or maybe they might require you to make some sort of return. So I think you need to do a bit of research and find out what the position is from the US, from whoever you're receiving the inheritance from, or maybe their law agent. And then I think, depending on what the result of that is, you probably should definitely go and get some advice here. from a tax consultant or an accountant who's and let them handle it for you.
Now, another topic, get rid of the expensive debt.
Yeah, look, we're living in an environment where interest rates have gone up. We all know that, which means that obviously the cost of borrowing has increased dramatically. And it's not just mortgages. People have term loans, they have credit card debt, and they have short-term borrowings. The ones to get rid of, if you're in a position to tackle, is not maybe your mortgage unless you're finding your repayments onerous. If you have short-term debt, they're the ones to get rid of first because they're very expensive. You could be paying, you know, you might be paying 4.5% on your mortgage, but you could be paying 9, 10, 11% on a short-term loan. So they're the ones to get rid of. They're the nasty ones in terms of cost. And I would always prioritize them, even if you're not in a position to clear them, but you can knock lumps off it, right? In the long term, you will save yourself far more money by getting rid of that stuff.
Mm. Final topic, the financial trauma of losing a partner. Not easy, Dave.
No, you know, people, unfortunately, when they have a partner who passes on, can't even begin to imagine the trauma that they experience. But on top of that, you have probably and possibly financial issues. And all I would just say is there is that whilst you can look back and say, well, I should have taken out life cover and my other half should have taken out life cover, and you know, there'll be the what ifs if things aren't left in a comfortable way. And I'm not saying that everybody's in a situation where they will have a problem. Most people hopefully have planned ahead, and that's a key element to plan ahead, to think about that unfortunate event if it does happen. But if it has happened and you haven't planned well for it, you know, get advice from somebody as regards how you tackle your situation. Everybody's situation is different, so I can't legislate for what position somebody's going to be in when a partner dies. So it varies from one person to the next, but it is traumatic, and the last thing you want to do is have financial issues on top of that.
All right, Dave McCarthy of McCarthy and Associates in Wokey, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. Now, though, still to come on the programme today, we have Mary Coughlin. She's talking to us about this Shine on Palestine, the alternative Eurovision. And we have a wonderful story on History Talks with the Fallers. Join us, John and Paul, to discuss a clock which was found. So all that and a lot more topics coming up between now and 12. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, located on the Monavay Road.
You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley, and I'm looking at a lovely event that's happening this weekend. It's called Shine on Palestine, the Alternative Eurovision. One of those taking part in this musical act is Mary Coughlin. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you? How are you sitting in the new chair?
I'm very well. Nice and cosy it is this morning, Mary. Tell me about Shine on Palestine, this Alternative Eurovision. A lot of musical acts across the region and the country taking part.
Yeah, we're doing shore to shore. We're doing one in Dublin and one in Galway, and I'm, of course, going to be in the one in Galway. But it's not the first time, and people think it is. We've been doing these, PALFest have been doing Alternative Eurovisions for a long, long time. The last one I did was in the stadium about 2019, I think. It's just because Israel has always been in the Eurovision. I don't know why, but so is Australia. But it's to shine a light. Everybody knows what's going on, and I don't think that anybody can really understand why Israel hasn't been asked to step back this year. Yeah. And Russia, as you know, were banned for life after they invaded Ukraine. And something going on there now called double standards, I think everyone would probably agree. And I really don't get it, you know. Mm. So we're having our gig, and we're going to have a great night in Leisureland. Tickets are only £20, as far as I'm aware. We put a special offer on there for 24 hours for €15, but I think that's just gone. We have a million great raffle prizes. There's going to be great music. Sure, Chardon is there. And Monday, and myself, and Tig, like everyone, it's going to be a great, great night. Mm. And we won't all stay on too long. We'll keep it short and keep it great. And the last gig I ran at Leisureland for the Turkish, the Syrian refugees at a Turkish camp went very well. And we're hoping this one will too. So we put it on at very short notice. So we're hoping that there'll be a great attendance tomorrow night.
And yeah, so tomorrow night, just give us the details of it.
Well, we're in there. Oh, no, not tomorrow.
Friday. God, Friday. It's
on Friday the 10th, starting at... The doors are open at 7. The posters are everywhere. They're online. They're on Instagram. They're on Facebook. It's Shine on Palestine. And as I said, there, I could go and look at the poster for you, but I don't think you need to. No, there's everyone is doing it. It's brilliant. Roisin El Sharif is doing it. Sheridan Mundy, myself. Dee Armstrong from Keela and her band. And there's a lot of Palestinian artists this year as well, musicians and poets taking part and doing readings. And it's just one of many events that we've been running since late October, you know.
Mm. And the funds,
since the genocide started.
The funds for this, Mary, going towards Gaza.
Going to Gaza. And if you ask me now which one, I couldn't tell you for sure. I was at an event the other night. They all went to Medicine Sans Frontières. And I did a gig myself there in November in the Olympia, and we gave them to the Red Crescent. It's more important now than ever that people, you know, turn up and show solidarity, you know. And the world is watching, and, you know.
It's a delicate time at the moment, Mary, because I know there's negotiations ongoing to try and agree a ceasefire, but there's also bombs dropping daily as well.
Well, they asked people to move. People picked up their tents and moved, and then they moved. I mean, the IDF put up photos. You never know if these things are real or not, but you got to see what's in front of your face, that they just bulldozed the gates, the Rafah gates, yesterday afternoon, shortly after Hamas had accepted the terms, the Israeli terms. It seems that's the way it is, and they're dropping bombs and killing people, just as they do every day. But this is not just this, you know, past 7 or 8 months. It's been going on for years. I was there in 2002. Ireland had a Consul General, Isalda Moylan, living in the Mount of Olives at the time, and she was doing her best. I met Mrs. Arafat. We discussed the situation. We were brought around the schools and everything that they were running, and various NGOs were helping. It was always a bad situation there. Mm-hmm. And from the little bit I saw, it would make your heart, break your heart, And that was a long, long time ago. And, it's been going on, it seems, forever,
So, Mary, are you and the other artists here calling for people to not watch the Eurovision this weekend?
Well, I love the Eurovision. I've always been watching it since I was a child up in Chantilly with a big bag of crisps, and a Fanta Orange. And it was a big thing. I saw Dana, winning. And it's something that I actually enjoy. But no, I had to tear myself. I couldn't watch it last night. Mm. And we did ask Bambi Thug if they would not participate. And I do know that they had said that they were pro-Palestine. Mm. But what a move it would have been. Because Ireland is so important in Eurovision terms. For the amount of times we've won it, equal only to Sweden, I think. Mm. What a statement it would have been for Bambi Thug to say, no, I'm not doing it,
I do know, I read a story today that Bambi Thug had actually wrote a message in Oma writing about peace.
In Ogham, she did.
But that was for the rehearsal. It wasn't allowed to go on the actual semi-final last night. So
was it not?
There are moves there. I believe the EBU, the European Broadcasting Union, didn't allow it to go on live last night, but it was in the dress rehearsal. Had to be removed, though.
Good grief. What are they on about? I don't get it. The EBU banned Russia when they invaded Ukraine. Not just for the year, but for perpetuity, in perpetuity. Mm. I don't understand it, and it's a question we ask ourselves every day. Why is this happening? Why are people, singing and dancing, and why is... it does come down to individual conscience in the end, I know, and I can safely say, if I had ever, and I did have aspirations years ago being on the Eurovision, I would not have done it. I know 100% in my heart and soul that I would not have done it if this had been going on. Mm. And it is all right to blame the EBU for doing it, but there is personal responsibility as well. And I do believe in that, It would have been a good thing to do.
Is there not an argument to be made, though, to keep it non-political and just to let the music do the talking as well? Or I know you've given the example.
That's what everyone says, but the European Broadcasting Union made it political by banning Russia and Belarus, if I'm not mistaken. So they made it political. They made a political statement when they said Russia could not take part in Eurovision because they invaded Ukraine. So it was, you know, so people keep saying that, you know, oh, but it's a political, it's a musical competition. And then, sure, ourselves in Ireland, as I recall, when we didn't win, on many occasions in the past several years, we used to say, oh, it's all political now. It's the countries, you know, with the bigger votes, you know, they're all politically aligned to each other. It's a long time since the Eurovision was a song contest. Anybody knows that anyway. And the EBU, the European Broadcasting Union, made it officially political when they banned Russia. And I don't know why they haven't banned Israel.
And I'm not saying it's good, bad or indifferent, but I'm just trying to understand it. Could it be the fact that Israel, that maybe there's an argument from them that it's an internal conflict inside a border and not between two different countries or states? Is that maybe the line they're going with?
It's a global disgrace what's happening. It's on our televisions every single minute of the day and night since October. It's on our phones. It is a genocide, the likes of which hasn't happened for years. And the people of Israel themselves are out on the streets protesting. They stayed out for 4 or 5 nights last month. They were out again the other night. They don't want this. They don't want this in their name. Israeli Jewish people in America are saying not in our name. They're sitting in on campuses all over the world, from Australia to America. They're sitting in on campuses all over the world and saying not in our name. You know.
I know.
We're watching it. And we're glorifying it by letting it happen and putting them in the Eurovision. I really do believe that. Actually glorifying it. That's a bit harsh, I know, but there you go.
And
we feel very passionately about what we do.
In terms of Bambi Thug, I know you said you didn't actually watch it last night, but do you wish Bambi Thug all the best? Because there's thoughts that Bambi Thug could go all the way here.
It's not a personal thing, although I did say that Bambi Thug, you know, I would have preferred that they would have pulled out, and I think the statement would have been far stronger than putting words on your face that nobody can read anyway, or whatever. If they go further, that'll be, you know, whatever. I can't rejoice in that, you know. Sorry.
Okay, Mary Cotton, it's called Shine on Palestine.
I'm not wishing her ill will or something like that. And as I said, I'm a huge Eurovision fan. I don't think I ever missed it before. And I was delighted when Liverpool put it on, you know, the year that they won. And everybody was supportive. And what a thing it would have been if they banned Israel and everybody could be joyful around this occasion and Ireland could have a great time, you know. So there you go.
It's called Shine on Palestine, the alternative Eurovision's happening on Friday night in Leisureland. Tickets, are they going well, Mary?
They're going well, but they're not going well enough, I might as well be honest. We're up at around 350.
Okay.
And I know that people might be getting a little fatigued with all of the concerts that have been going on, because there have been concerts in every town in Ireland since November, you know, in support of Palestine and support of various charities in Palestine. But there you go. We really need to sell some tickets. We got some great raffle prizes. We're streaming it online for 24 hours, and that is already bringing in revenue already. So we're very happy about that as well.
All right.
We'll just do the gig as if it was filled to the rafters, and I hope it will be. So everybody in Galway, see you there.
Brilliant. Well, the best of luck with it. Mary Cotton, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. Coming up next, we're looking at History Talks and a wonderful story about a clock in Galway City. That's coming up next. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavay Road. A new way to car shop.
Good morning, you're listening to History Talks on Galway Talks with John Morley, and I'm joined in studio now by Paul Feller and John Feller of Feller's Jewellers. You're both very welcome on to the programme today. And Paul, I'll start with you first. This clock we have in front of us at the moment, a remarkable history that's just been uncovered in the past few days.
It's a fantastic history, and we're delighted to have it. We're 145 years in business this year, so we're preparing for our 150th, and this clock came to our attention from the presentation nuns, and they kindly contacted us to say the clock was with them, and we have now got the clock back. It was sold, and this is very historical, it was sold in 1900.
Wow.
And we believe it was sold, we moved from Dominic Street in 1899 to our present premises in Williams Gate Street. So the thing that the clock was sold by my great-grandfather in that very shop that has come back to 124 years later.
Wow, and just even the craftsmanship of it, is it a mantelpiece clock or what would you call it?
It's a mantelpiece clock. It's a 14-day, which means you wind it every 14 days and it strikes the hour. And it's got S. Fowler Galway on the dial.
Wow.
And it's lovely for us. We don't have any Fowler mantel clocks. We kindly got one wall clock a few years ago. Again, a fabulous piece of history that, again, Stephen Fowler would have sold himself personally. And it came back to us a number of years ago. So now we're getting pieces together for our 150th, and we're delighted.
And how did it actually come into your possession now, in the past few days?
The nuns in the presentation nuns are moving to a new convent, and as they're clearing out what's there, they contacted us to let us know that this clock was there, and would we have an interest in it? And we certainly have.
Brilliant. And the condition of it, have you ever seen a clock in this good condition, John, like from this period?
I don't see too many clocks from this period. So, no, I have never seen a clock in such good nick after 124 years on the go. And to think that it was repaired back in Fowler's in 1916 and was still working up until recent enough is a credit to the workmanship and the craftsmanship of the time.
It's amazing it was worked on in 1916 as well, a very crucial period of our history here, Paul.
Absolutely. The whole clock just reeks of history, and not just for Fowler's, it's part of the Galway history. And to think that we had watchmakers working in 1916, actually some of the watchmakers used to live in the premises in Williams Gate Street, and we've seen that from the census of 1910, was it?
1911.
And it's just a massive piece of history. And normally I'm not taken by these pieces, but this is just so special, and we're so delighted to have it back.
And so well preserved as well. Just talk to us about the woodworking on it and all the different bells and whistles.
Yes, so the movement will be a hack, 14-day strike, as Paul mentioned. We know this from inside the door. That was the Hamburg American watch company or clock company at the time, and they were in existence since 1883. So it would have been purchased or brought in by Fowler's and sold in the shop. So it's not too clear. They say that the movement was separate to the casing, so I'm sure there was a bit of assembly done as well. And with the S. Fowler Galway in the front, that would indicate that it was made in-house. So it's a fabulous piece of workmanship, and it still strikes on the hour. We wound it up and tested her out, and a bit of servicing was required, and we'll hopefully get it back up and in working order. But the wood is, the craftsmanship on the wood is perfect, and there's very little in terms of damage to the clock. The nuns looked after it very well.
Mm. John, would you mind reading what's on the back of the clock?
There's a note on the inside of the clock that this clock was given to M. Patrick by a dear friend, Mrs. Kyocullen, in 1900, the granddaughter of O'Connell. And that's handwritten up along the side here, John.
Wow.
Along that side. And then the next clue, which that was the 124 years, the next clue would be a Fowler's service docket, for all the world you call it, presentation convent Galway, 12th to the 1st, 1916, cleaned and repaired from S. Fowler, watchmaker and jeweller, Williamsgate Street, Galway. So, the clock is housed in a beautiful, ornate, wooden carved housing with a lovely hand-painted dial and the famous S. Fowler name just below the 12 o'clock.
Mm. Do we know what happened to it between 1916 and the present day, or has it just resided with the nuns during that time?
We don't know, John. I'd say it's been with the nuns. but I'm not certain on that. We're just delighted that it's back with us.
And in terms of the craftsmanship and how it's stayed preserved, are you as impressed as John is, Paul?
Oh, I think you'd have to be impressed by it. Like the wood on the clock itself, the decoration, it's just a pity that we're not live on TV. But
well, we'll take a picture and we'll put it up later on, so we will.
The dial is in very good condition. The wood, there's a slight crack in just the very top of the piece of mantel clock at the moment, but we'll get that fixed. And apart from that, it's in fantastic condition. It has been looked after and minded. And there's even very little the normal wear and tear of the chips you'd see. It's not there. It's been looked after.
Yeah. And in terms of how much that would have actually been put together by your forefathers there in Fallers, what can you tell us about that?
Okay, we would think that the movement was bought in as is. So he would have got the dial and selected the dial and got that into the movement here, into the wooden case. Yeah. The dial is a beautiful dial. It's got Roman numeral numbers on it, and it's got the S Valor Galway. And it's a beautiful piece of wood that has been looked after, and nice decoration all around. And if we had something like similar today, I don't think we'd have any problem selling it.
Absolutely, no. And the wooden, would that have been brought in from somewhere else? Because it's a beautiful carvings, or was that all done in-house as well?
I don't think it would have been all done in-house, because Stephen was very much a clockmaker rather than a cabinet maker.
Yeah.
So you'd normally get the people with wood experience to do the wood part. The older clocks, the older whack-at-the-wall clocks that were from Fallers, there was a shortage of wood around when they were made. So they're generally made of four different types of wood. But this seems to be one type of wood going right through the old clock. So it's a fabulous piece.
A huge history with this clock, and it's almost as big as the history with your own shop yourself. Tell us a bit about that and how far you go back.
Well, we go back to 1879 when Stephen opened the shop in Dominic Street. He stayed in Dominic Street until 1899, and he made the big decision, would the customers cross the street at what we know now as Bridge Street and that bridge and move up? And he took the chance, and he moved to Williamsgate Street, to where our traditional jewellery site is. That would be number 12, Williamsgate Street. We've been there since. My father then acquired the premises next door to us, which was originally was a butcher shop called Costello's. Later it became Falcon's Drapery Shop. And around the 60s, my father got that shop, and for the American market, really, for the selling Waterford Crystal and the likes, as the tourist business began in Galway.
Okay.
And we've been there since. From that premises, we operate the internet, the website, to the States and to Ireland, and we sell both traditional and fashion jewellery.
And John, you mentioned that it's coming up to your anniversary, and you actually have a voucher to give away as well. So if people want to text in clock straight away to 086 38 33 553, what are you giving away for us today, John?
So to celebrate the 145 years of Fallers Jewellers, we're giving away a voucher for €145.
Brilliant. So if they text in clock straight away, they can be in a chance of winning that as well. But if we move on then and look at the history, you mentioned that anniversary, you're gathering artefacts. Have you found anything else up to this standard or of this pedigree?
We have other pieces. There was a presentation to my grandfather, William Faller, of a beautiful cigarette box, a sterling silver cigarette box.
Wow.
So we have that piece. There was a lovely tray presented by the staff to Stephen on his 50 years in business. and we have that. We have very good books and accounts going back, the minute books telling us what's happening with the building and things going out for tender and stuff like that. So we have a lot of information. Needless to say, after 145 years, you do get a lot of stuff.
But even the fact that you had the actual logs of this clock itself, it's a huge primary source for historians even to look back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's fantastic that you're... We're still in a shop that people can walk in and literally hand us in items dating back from 1879. Like recently we had a lovely lady that dropped in a postcard from May 1913. And just to have this, it's a wealth of knowledge. I love the history side of it. I think it nearly gives you a window into the past of what it was like back then. And it's just an honour and a privilege, really, to be able to receive all these items. Yeah.
And Paul, you are one of the old families of Galway, and there's been a lot of change to businesses in the town, and some have gone and some have stayed. But it's great to see that there are some still surviving into the modern day, and with works of art like this, you can see why.
It's sad to see some of the companies that I grew up with in Galway. Galway has changed quite a bit recently. The famous names have gone, but there are some very good shops still remaining, and we hope that some new shops will come in to replace those who have retired or gone out of business. The town needs good shopping. We'd like to consider ourselves to be one of the best jewellers, and that's our prerogative, and we'd like other good shops to join us.
And John, in terms of the plans ahead for the celebrations, can you tell us anything yet? Or,
well, there's a lot under wraps now, John, so I can't go divulging too much. But you can bet your bottom dollar there'll be a nice party after it all. It's fantastic that we're still trading throughout all this period, and that we're celebrating 150 years. In the next 5 years, it'll be a privilege and an honour.
Yeah, and Paul, back to you. In terms of clocks like this, do you have anything of this type at the moment, or is this of its time?
No, that's off its time. We have nothing like that at the moment, because the movement itself is just unique. 14-day strike is not an everyday clock, and we're very privileged to have it back, but no, we don't have anything as similar. Things have changed over to a lot of quartz clocks and things like that, so things have changed quite a bit.
The closest clock I've seen to it is where you've recently done a show up in Burke's in Clonburr.
Yes.
And there is a similar, but not altogether the exact same, but an extremely similar clock up there. And the Burke's clock up there is working away no problem at all.
I can attest to that.
Yeah.
In terms of what your plans are for this and the other artefacts, what are you hoping to do? Are you going to exhibit them? Or?
Yeah, we'd like to get a space within the shop. We'd like to get this fully back to a working condition, which we will do fairly soon. And we'll get everything together. We'd like to, because it's not every company that can say, 145 years, and we've survived a lot of things. We've survived wars, and the Corbett fire that went nearly destroyed the front of the shop altogether. But we were back up and running shortly after that. So we've been through a lot, and we'll put it all together as part of our history.
And I assume you're not going to sell it, but let's say you were, what would this set me back?
An awful lot of money, John, because we'd be selling it new to the family silver at that stage. So, no.
Priceless.
Priceless.
Priceless, wow. It's a remarkable story, and if you do get any more updates on it, I'd love to see it when it's back in fully functioning order as well, so if you can give us an update on that as well. But we will put it up online for people to see as well, because it is just a remarkable piece of work. It's beautiful, beautiful clock. Paul and John Feller of Feller's Jewellers, thank you for joining us on History Talks on Galway Talks today. That's where we make our leave for the programme for today. My thanks to Darren Kelly, who produced the show with me today, and Ava, who took your calls on reception. The winner of the voucher for Feller's, I can tell you straight away, is Geraldine Keeley of Knocknacara. So well done, Geraldine. You're winning that €145 voucher for Feller's Jewellers. So congratulations to you. Already very busy tomorrow coming up on the show. Pieta and Electric Ireland launch a 2024 Darkness into Light in Connacht to raise vital funds for Pieta's suicide prevention services. We also have the Connacht Tribune headlines. UK ME expert to give 5 free talks in May as part of a national tour. they're coming to go as well. In Culture Corner, we have Portumna Community School ahead of their school musical. On Arts to Protect, it's episode 48. And I have Conal O'Quinn, who was selected for the EU Citizens Panel on Energy Efficiency. He was randomly selected. It's a very interesting story. And he was out in Brussels and he had to go to different webinars in Dublin and all over the place as well. And for Music Mornings, we have Dave Devaney. He's a Ballina folk rock singer and he's launching a new album during the summer. So he'll be coming in with his brother Jake and playing a few songs as well. So that's it for the programme for today. If you want to get involved tomorrow, our text and WhatsApp number is 086-383-553. You can phone reception on 091-77-0077 and email comments at goibayfm.ie. We're back with you from 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Majinwa Awin Trinigaliva. And a reminder as well that on Friday week we're going to Portumna for Community Matters, so if you want to get involved, do let us know. Up next is Ronan Lardner with the Livewire. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.